Hello, Bulldogs. Thank you for tuning in to Who's Behind the Bulldog, Arvada High School's community interview podcast series. I'm your host and one of the assistant principals at Arvada, Jeremy Jensen. Each week, I'll sit down with someone from our Arvada community, be it staff, students, families, or other community members, to hear their stories. We'll discuss their histories, successes, challenges, learnings, future hopes and dreams, and much more. I hope you find some connections in their stories and hopefully are inspired to take some time to get to know them a bit better as our school year progresses. We have an amazing community here at Arvada, and I hope we can continue to strengthen that despite the challenges that await us in these unknown times.
This week's episode is with Shannon Corman. This year, Shannon teaches physical science and biology. In our conversation, Shannon talks about how he's wired to make honesty and openness his approach in connecting with students. He talks about his excitement for his new freshman physics class and prepping students for the next few years of science. Shannon also addresses how restorative practices has influenced his learning recently and provided opportunities to grow stronger relationships with students in the face of conflict. Thanks so much for taking the time to listen to this week's episode of Who's Behind the Bulldog.
Welcome to Who's Behind the Bulldog, Shannon Corman.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself and what brought you into education.
So what brought me into education mostly is that I never wanted to leave. Where do we even start? I hated school when I was younger. Like, I was not a good student. I was a terrible student. In fact, I haven't had a kid that was anywhere close to the level of disruption that I had caused. And it was just something that I never really liked and never really enjoyed until I got to college. And in college, I realized how bad I had screwed myself, because my first 2 years of college, I basically flunked out. And I had to leave Metro or Western State and come back down to Metro because I didn't know how to be a student. I didn't know anything about learning and wanting to learn and anything like along those lines until I finally got to Metro, and then I had to start paying for everything out of pocket. And that's when it kind of really sunk in. Like, I'm paying all this money. I need to actually take it seriously. Mm-hmm. So I was working full time, going to school full time, kind of just busting my butt as hard as I could to try and get everything done, and realize I would much rather be in school than I would rather work. And so ultimately, I went down a lot of different paths, had a lot of different jobs, and I've always found that I like the excitement and I like the difference and the change and just everything that education brings. And I also just love being the lifelong learner, and that's something that I learned and really picked up, because I was in school for secondary school for 13 years. So I was a lifelong student, and I just really liked it. And then I got to the point where they wouldn't allow me to get loans anymore because I'd been in school for too long. And so then I kind of just had to graduate. And I also was forced into it.
They're like, it's time, Shannon. You need to end your time here.
They did. And I was working at a pathology lab. And so they needed me to graduate to get my license so that I could become a tech. And because they needed me to get this promotion so I can start doing a bunch of helping out, because their numbers were increasing. So they essentially made me graduate a semester or two earlier than I should have, because I had some classes I needed to make up, and I kind of forgot to drop a few and just stopped going to them. So those F showed up on my transcript that I didn't really get rid of. But, whatever. It didn't really affect anything until I was going to be a noise scholar, and then my GPA for my undergrad wasn't good enough. And I was like, yeah, that's okay. I'm all right not being noise. So it worked out. So, and then that's where ultimately why I ended up there, just because I love learning.
What were some of your jobs that you had?
Oh, God. Let's see. I started out as a baggy boy, and I was a pool boy. I was a model for class, a nude model for an art class. But then, God, what did I do? I worked as a gas station clerk. I did a bunch of construction. I was a night security guard. I ultimately ended up at Lowe's for a couple years, and then I worked at MetroPath, which is a molecular pathology lab, and I worked there for almost 8 years before I finally worked myself out of a job. I literally brought in this new big machine that can do all these tests, and I wrote all the SOPs, and I wrote all these other things, and validated all the tests, and got it up and running, and as soon as I did, they didn't need my job anymore, so I worked myself out of a job there. But it actually worked out great, because at the time, it was the right time for me to go back to school, because I had been out of school for a couple years at that point, and I was feeling a little antsy, and that's when I looked up the UCD program, and went and did their urban education, because I really liked the program. I really liked giving back. Working at MetroPath was really eye-opening for me. Their main customer were cytology on pap smears. And so they were looking to scanning for any abnormal cells and see if there's any cervical cancer for women. And we're doing that job for so long, it really kind of changes your whole perspective on just women and women's suffrage and everything along those lines. And then that kind of really opened my eyes to just all the inequities that were going around just pretty blatantly everywhere, and it's all just built into our system that we have. And so, I mean, I know I can't do much, but I figure I can start with the younger generation and just one kid at a time and hope that I can kind of bring it through.
Arvada, then, did you go after your program, did you get placed right in Arvada?
I actually ended up at Thornton High School. Thornton, because I live in North Glen, and so Thornton High School is right by my house, and it's pretty, it has the same kind of reputation that Arvada has. Like, it's this hard school, and it's just full of all these bad kids, and blah, 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 and, like, it's all crap, just like Arvada's is. So you go in, and the kids are great, the people are awesome. I just didn't get along with the admin very well, and so it kind of made my first few 2 years of teaching a little rough, being, like, trying to learn how to teach at the same time and not really getting any support from an admin that was actively trying to get rid of me. And so it kind of made things hard. And so I started looking for other jobs, and that's when kind of like was avoiding Jeffco for a little bit, but then they did have a lot of change in the past few years. And so I thought it would be good. Arvada to me seemed like a great fit. It had the same kind of demographic that I liked. It's basically the same demographic as Thornton, except for literally half the kids. And so I thought it would be a great fit. It wasn't until actually after I applied and got the job that I realized that it was connected to UCD, and that I actually knew Mark Wiesel was in the same cohort as I was, and I worked with him. Barb Stewart was a year before me. Laura Schoenfeld was a year after me. So a lot of teachers there actually went through the same program. So it was nice to see that. Nice to see a lot of the same faces, and knowing like that they're all kind of had the same, I don't know what to call it, the same like woke awake that like UCD gives you. And so I thought it really helped us everyone be on the same kind of page.
Cool. What are you most proud of in your time spent at Arvada thus far?
There have been, I think, just the relationships that I've been able to establish with some of the kids. Like there's most of our kids are just great kids. They're just respectful. They're nice. When you start talking to them, they open up. They have all these great and wonderful ideas. And I think that was something I was really missing at Thornton, was I was focusing too much on how to be a teacher and not so much on the relationships. And at Arvada, I think a lot of the focus was more on being able to build those relationships and kind of giving us more leeway with the curriculum area. And so I think it's definitely changed a lot about how I teach. It's changed a lot about how I see things. Just being able to take the time to just sit down and have a conversation and talk to the kids. So I think a lot of the relationships I've built, I'm pretty proud of. And it's sad to see them go after they're graduating, they're gone. So this year, this graduation class is going to be my really the first class of kids that I taught at Arvada. And so it's going to be, it's really, it's amazing to see them as seniors right now. And especially because, like, this is my first, like, real group of seniors that I've had. I'm still pretty, this is only my fifth year. And so, yeah, it's exciting. And it's just kind of really a mixed bag.
It's like a bittersweet type of thing, right? Like, it's cool seeing people go on to their next things, but also, like, it's in a revolving door in a way.
It is, but mostly it's all for the best. Because, like, they'll pop up at some point. You'll always be able to see them more. But just to know that they finished this part of their journey and they're on to being actual people wherever they go. So it's exciting.
What are some of the things that you find are super helpful to help build those relationships and keep kids engaged?
I really think transparency and honesty are kind of really my go-tos. I'm probably too honest. And it sort of like, just how, but it's how I see the world and it's how I like to be talked to. It's how I like to see things. It's just really just straight to the point of like not beating around the bush and just getting out to like, this is how it is. This is how it, the whole world kind of works in whatever eye or whatever view you see it from. And then this is how we're going to do it. Or when it comes down to like the actual class time, like this is why we're doing it. This is the reason why it's here. Like, yeah, these doing these sets of problems, it's monotonous. I know that. But it also serves a purpose. It's this practice. It's building up this muscle memory. And just kind of really breaking it down and being like to the why of why we're doing it. Like, so there's a reason behind it and they're just not having to do it for just because we're told. And then at the same time, I think they, a lot of them are just like, all right, great, just let us do the work. We don't need to know all this behind it. But I think there's still a lot of kids that really appreciate the, just the knowing why they have to do what they have to do.
When you say too honest, are you talking about like directness or just like being truthful?
Being truthful, and sometimes truth isn't what you want to hear in the moment. And, but it's what it is. And I think, I can't think of an example right off the top of my head right now, but, just to the point of like letting them know that, especially a lot of our minority kids, like the world is set up against you and this is how it is. Like, there's some quotes I remember, like one that always resonates with me is the world's always going to need dictators. And I don't know where it comes from. I don't know who said it. But it was someone in higher ed education, and they said, like, basically they have it set up, we need the kids to fail because we need kids to do remedial jobs. And to me, like, that was one of the things that from the UCD, from the class that we took, kind of like exploring our whiteness, about how the system is set up to have like this split, this huge divide, so that we have just our peons and then we have our those that are going to be pushed on to do more just based on what they've been given, with not because of their merits or not because of who anything else besides just what they're born into. And to me, that's always, it's never sat right, and it's something that I like to be vocal and I like to talk about. And same with like mental illness when it comes to stuff like that. Like, I really like to be open and talk and just bring that up probably too often, but like, to me, it's something that's important that's not talked about. And I don't know.
So why the two part? Why, like, where's this part of, like, is there a...
Sometimes I go too far. And, like, kids don't want to keep hearing that they've been dealt the short end of the stick sometimes. And to keep, I think, to keep bringing it up too much or too... I don't know. And then my bluntness, I think, too, comes across as from time to time, like when a kid's just trying to get help and I'm like, you got to figure it out for yourself. Like, that's the way this world, like, you're not going to get anywhere unless you're able to actually sit down and figure these things out, because there's only so much that people are going to be able to do for you before they start looking for somebody else. And it's a lot of the how the world is too. When they get out, like, their bosses aren't going to be nice to them. The world's not going to be nice to them. And you might have some that are good, you might have some that are not, but you just got to be prepared to have to work, like, and have to work hard. And that's something that I don't think that they've been really, it doesn't seem to me like they're used to hearing that often, that they're going to have to just be able to really be able to buckle down and just get to work.
Do you think it needs to be like this truth and like reality needs to be coupled with some sort of like hope or skill set to say like, and we can make the change here?
Oh yeah. Oh, and there's definitely that side of the coin too. Like speaking of going to hope for climate change, for instance, like when I do a pretty big unit on climate change, and there's always this one video that I really like to show. It's called Before the Flood. It's a Leonardo DiCaprio film. And he does this documentary all about climate change, everything else, because he was the spokesman for climate change for a while, and he's the UN representative for climate change. And so it's like the kids are always hearing like how bad the climate is and how the world is changing and how everything's getting destroyed. But at the end of the movie, there's still hope. There's still room. Like if we take the steps that are needed to be taken and we actually start proactively working towards fixing the problems that we've caused, then there's still hope. There's still ways to fix the planet. There's still ways humanity will make it through. It might look a lot different. I mean, we don't even know what it's going to look like after all this COVID stuff. But we're always able to pull through and make it. We've lived 20,000 years on this planet. We have lived through some rough, some good, and there are going to be more rough and there's going to be more good, and we'll be able to figure it out. At least that's how I think, and that's what I tell them. And so, yeah, I don't know.
Is that your approach to equity? Is like the honesty, the truth?
I think so. I would definitely say, like, the openness and the just starting the conversations, I think, is one of the ways that I do bring equity into kind of the room, is to like open up everyone's eyes to the fact that there are these inequities that are out there and they're existing, and unless we shine light on them and talk about them, then they're just going to be able to keep being swept under the rug. And so I think that's with climate change, mental health, the race inequities, they all are systemic problems that need people to work on them, need a voice to it. And so I think this generation is going to be that voice, because, well, ultimately they're going to have to be, because we kind of just left it to them.
Tell me a little bit about PBL. You got any cool projects that you've been excited about or currently excited about or looking forward to?
A lot of the PBLs we do, I like, I enjoy, but I don't think I have any like outstanding, amazing, cool things like a lot of the other teachers have, like the tattoo PBL or Lord's Rock PBL. But I really do like the one that, like, say we're doing right now is all about nutrition. And it's just about taking a look at your favorite snack. What is it that you want to eat? What is it that you like eating? And is it actually healthy for you? And then let's break this down. Like, what do you normally eat on a daily basis? What do these things do? What are these macromolecules that you're ingesting actually do in your body? And I think it's all about relating it to things that they can actually use throughout the rest of their life. Like, so a lot of the PBLs I like are the ones that have some real life weight to them and something that they can use. So like nutrition is huge, and obviously we have a whole nutrition class, but like, so just starting about thinking about it now, I think is really beneficial. I do kind of just a silly one that really doesn't, it's not academic really, but it's more for fun. And there's these old videos that they made in the 60s when the government was really trying to push physics, and so they put a bunch of money into physics, and they also tried to get us to go into the metric system around then too. But they made some of these amazing videos, but they're so old. Like, they're hard to watch. But so one of my PBLs at the end of my physics unit is I have them recreate this video that we watched in the beginning of the year. And so they have to bring in all this knowledge that they've acquired throughout the year through physics, like of how all these things work and how to actually build these things. But then mostly it's just a lot of fun, and the kids get to watch this kind of silly video about, it's like these guys hanging upside down or sitting on this rotating platform, and they get to try and figure out how to film from upside down viewpoints or build spinning moving platforms and all this other stuff. And I think it's more just a lot of fun. It's a big end of the year kind of thing, and so it's really a accumulation of their year, and then also just kind of a celebration of we've made it, and let's enjoy this last month or so and make a funny, hilarious video.
Do you have some to share with us?
I do have a video to share, not currently. Okay. But from, I wasn't able to do it last year, obviously. But 2 years ago, I have the video, and I've actually, I show it to the kids. I show the main video, and then I show them the recreated video that they're going to be able to do. And they're always like, oh, we can do such a better job. It's going to be so much cooler this year. And I'm like, good. Yeah. I want to see it. Let's do it.
We just talked about that in the book study, actually, about exemplars and how, like, more examples is actually better. And it doesn't, like, stifle creativity. It just helps support creative thinking, actually. What are you most excited about this year?
My class. So I'm doing a new freshman class, and basically I'm teaching freshman physics, which to a lot of people is kind of like mind-blowing, but it's really been a lot of fun so far. We've done really conceptual, so it's really hands-on, and I don't know if we go full remote how I'm going to pull it off, but for now it's been, we've been outside, we've been doing walks and runs and just figuring out time and distance and speed and all that. And so, and just kind of like really taking, like, I've always really enjoyed physics. It's always been an elective that I taught, not something that I've done full on, and now taking it to be like this full on course and then teaching it to freshmen who are kind of just really still open and wide-eyed and like accepting of all this, and also using it as a guide to like really get them prepped and ready for the next few years of science so that they can take on these courses and really just excel at them, is kind of like, it's really, it gets me really excited to know that they're going to be able to hopefully expand on what I teach them in these future classes and really get to enjoy and learn the love of science that I have.
Do you get a chance to embed a lot of math in there too?
I do. I'm one of my challenges this year is actually trying to figure out how to make, get the math down to the level that where they're at. So kind of, I was teaming up with Taran, talking to him a little bit about kind of how he teaches and things, where he teaches them at, really talking with the math people about where exponents come in, where squaring come in, where do these algebraic rearrangements of the equations come in, so I can kind of team up with them and we can teach them at the same time, and so we can really help build that base that they have. But then it's also like finding some of these equations, like average acceleration or something, where it has the squares or the square roots in it that they're not quite there mathematically yet, and how to do that conceptually to really make it make sense and something that they can do just in a lab or with their hands or something else where they don't have to worry so much about the math, but the math is embedded and it's there.
Yeah, I think there's good opportunities as we move forward with physics during the freshman year to like embed it more and more and, well, and that's, do some integrated stuff.
Also why I went with physical science too is it can be a lot of physics, but then when come at the end of the year, I start throwing in some chemistry and start really getting them excited about what's coming up in a couple more years, so that they know, like, they know that they have all this exciting other classes that they can take once they get to their upper level years in high school. And so I really like, I like just kind of kindling this flame of inquiry and science thinking.
Yeah, you gotta keep it going, right? Especially if they're coming in as freshmen excited about it.
Yeah.
Anything you're really trying to hone in on this year, instructionally speaking? Anything you want to like try to hone your skills tighter?
Lots of things, honestly. Like I said, I've done this for 5 years, and yet I still feel like I have no idea what I'm doing most of the time. And it's a lot of it's just kind of how I do things, and I like the feeling of not knowing what I'm doing, because it helps kind of spur me and drives me forward a little bit. But at the same time, I'm also like, it's never taken me this long to master something, and it's this challenge. And so getting better at just the craft, getting better at building relationships, because you can never be that good at it. I really focusing on kind of just the restorative classroom piece, but more of like just really having less hammer and more pillow. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but just really to be able to form that restorative piece and really connect with a lot of the kids that I usually struggle connecting with. Mm-hmm. So I think that's my focus this year is. So focusing on just relationships and really that restorative piece to the relationship, and just kind of how to build a strong foundation so that we can really focus on the learning if we ever do get to come back together and we don't have all these other outstanding issues.
You know, it took me about 5 years before I kind of had to admit to myself and kind of just realize really, like, oh, I'm never figuring this out. Like, this is going to be like every year is going to be something that is going to, I'm going to need to like grow and learn something different. There's no like end to learning in this profession.
So I've been told.
Well, you said earlier you're a lifelong learner, so.
Yeah, and that's why I love this job. And I don't know what it is. It's just the being able to constantly learn, being able to improve, being able, like the things I learned from the kids. It's just.
Shannon, what has been your best failure?
My best failure? Can't think of anything I would rather do.
That's awesome.
I'd have to fall back on restorative practices again. Getting back to that, too honest, at some points, I have definitely had times and moments where I've crossed the line and said some more inappropriate, or not really inappropriate, but just kind of even hurtful things, and then really regretting it, but then getting that chance, that moment to sit down and have a restorative conversation and really to be like, hey, you know, we were both kind of heated in the moment and things were said, and how can we go about fixing this? How can we build it? And some of the stronger relationships that I've built have started out incredibly rocky. I've started out kind of with both of us really butting heads, and then able to sit down and just kind of just figure out, like, we're both human. We're both just trying to do the best we can, and like that we can help each other out. And I've actually developed some really good relationships based on ones that started out really not so well. So I think some of my failures, some of my, what did you say, falling forwards, my successful failures have been really not so much fixed because of the failure, but fixed because of able to follow through and really just like seeing each day as a new day and a new chance to start over. Mm-hmm. And really work together.
It's a tough thing to do. I was told, you know, like, try to approach conflict is an opportunity rather than, you know, a barrier. You know, it's an opportunity to grow something, and it's awesome to hear that some of these, you know, instances or conflicts with students, you know, once you sat down and hashed things out or attempted to understand each other and showed humanity with the person, that allows that relationship to actually be a lot stronger than never addressing it, you know?
Yeah, realizing that you're both human, and there's always two ways, two minds, and there's always a give and take, but there's always something you can gain from somebody else. every single person, or okay, this is how I feel, but every single person is, there can be no two people that are alike. There's absolutely no possible way to raise two people exactly the same way. And with the way that the schemas and our brains kind of learn and adapt to things, like all that conscious and unconscious, everything that's happening around you at all times, like there's no way that two brains are the same. And by having two unalike brains mingle and match, and that's how you build those synapses, that's how you be able to see the world in different light. Like, to me, that's when those aha moments, like the things that we're striving for, that we love seeing, like that's when it really clicks, is when those two brains are actually able to really coincide and like have a talk, have a conversation, have a meeting, and they're able to see how the other one thinks. And really, just to me, like that's the key, is just the different way people think, the different way people see the world. And by able to see it in somebody else's perspective, like that's how you really learn. Mm-hmm. At least that's what I feel.
Because everybody's different, right? You know, like yeah. Everybody's got a different approach. And like, how do you see the world? How do you approach this? Like, what's your mind? What's your take on the situation? Right. Like, as opposed to everybody must have a pretty similar take on it. Like, as to me, you know, or
which, how there's no way that can ever possibly be true. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no. Yeah, we're all just so different. Like, you might be aligned and you might look close, but deep, like, everybody sees things in a different light, mm-hmm. basically.
What's your big advice for other people?
Don't be too hard on yourself. So, being that this is a constant learning and that you're never going to be good at, well, okay, we might. But just, especially in the first years, like, you're going to make mistakes and own it. Like, you're going to mess up and everything's going to happen. At times you're going to feel like everything's going wrong, and just let the kids know, like, hey, I'm having a day. Like, and just to be honest and open and know that they're human, you're human, and tomorrow's always a new day. Like, if you have the worst day in the world, just don't let it keep you down. Just know that you can start fresh every single day.
It's really well said. Really appreciate you, really appreciate your honesty, really appreciate your failing forward, as you said, and like owning things and, you know, figuring things out.
And I appreciate everything everybody's doing, really. It takes all of us. And so
thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you all for tuning into today's podcast. I want to encourage you to take a minute to reach out to today's guest and make a personal connection. Until next time, this has been Jeremy Jensen with Who's Behind the Bulldog.